I think about John Wall that I think really hurts John Wall is that he wears his emotions on his sleeve so much. Like, you know when John Wall's pumped. You know when he's excited. You know when he's sad, he's pissed. And that's the John Wall. Like, that's John Wall the player. That's who he is. And when he's kind of struggling, there's no way for him. He's just moping. And you can see it. And I don't know how much that seeps in through the rest of the team. That's why we kind of play psychoanalyst right here, where we're like, I don't know what's up. We're speculating. Maybe there's something personal. Maybe there's an injury. We don't know what. Because this John Wall right now is just, this isn't the guy that we have seen. You know, we saw him struggle as a rookie, you know, here and there, struggle dealing with, you know, Andre Blatch and JaVale McGee and you know, that cast of characters. But since then, like, this has been John Wall's team pretty much throughout his career, especially since he came back from injury. After he came back from injury that half season, this has been his team, you know, since 2002, 2013 season. And he has been high John Wall, elite level. And so right now, how much do you think that plays into his personality and persona? Now he just kind of doesn't know how to get out of this because he's just so negative and down. I don't know if he's beating himself up too much, you know?
And again, I think it falls back on the bar that he set for himself. He wants to be a certain type of player. And like you mentioned, when he doesn't become that type of player on a play or in a game, he shows it. He really takes it to heart. He's an emotional guy. He mentioned to us one time in training camp that he was an edgy guy. He's always on the edge. He's always worried about how he's perceived and how he looks and whether or not he's playing well enough. It all starts with whether or not he's playing enough, obviously. He's not really playing well enough. It's not about his image so much as it is his image on the basketball floor. For John, I think for him to go back and to align back onto what he was or who he is, it's going back to the principle of him being the guy that's the leader, the guy that is put in position to put others in a position to succeed, his teammates. And they put the talent around him. He needs to believe in them. He needs to go back to getting them the ball and being the guy that he knows he's the best at being. And that's being the distributor, being the guy that's the catalyst, you know, the facilitator, and just running this team. It all starts with him. He knows it. He acknowledged it. And hopefully he lives up to it. He has to.
Yeah, it's funny because John Wall, you mentioned about how he's perceived. I would like to him sometimes to be less how he's perceived in interviews, because when the recorders aren't rolling, he's a really funny, engaging. He will say whatever. He'll give so much shit. And when the recorders stop, he goes into this drone-ish. I would say he's cliche. He does say cliches, but he gets very analytical, kind of nerdy, wonky basketball, which I kind of respect. But I'm like, where's the dude harassing all the teammates, giving shit? Who's the guy that knows every player in college basketball? Who's talking to every single person, like every worker in that arena, give them shit about like whatever, you know, talking about their girlfriend, their mom, what's up, you know, like instead we get like this, like, oh, you know, they played harder than we did, you know, we need to be better at passing, we had too many turnovers. And I'm like, yo, dude, give me the real, like, where's the real John Wall? Because I'm exposed to a lot of the real John Wall, and sometimes I think he gets caught up in this perception. It was driven into him by his handlers and by his team at an early age. And I think he handles it well. Don't get me wrong. I mean, this guy had so much pressure on him at 19 years old. And the way he's navigated those waters and never been in trouble, never done anything wrong, and all the pressure and being from Raleigh and just kind of being the whole man and his family and you know, the big contract. And he's kind of succeeded. And, you know, he wrote all his things on his shoes and all the slights that he's got from the national media, he had succeeded on a personal level. But sometimes I just want to, like, dude, just loosen up a little bit, man. Like, say the same shit you're going to say to people that goes and gets you coffee or hot chocolates at McDonald's. Instead, you're just talking to me like I already know what answer he's going to give me when someone asks him a question.
You're totally nailing this right now. Like, I completely agree with every single thing you just said. In terms of John Wall, his character off camera and on camera. And what really sticks out to me is, you know, he gave that interview with Bill Simmons on Grantland, and it was a 17-minute long interview. And I remember one of the comments that stuck out to me always, and I didn't like the guy for leaving it because it's John Wall, but he was like, what did I just listen to? Was that a business interview? Was that like a job interview?
Yeah, there's no personality at all, right?
You know, Bill Simmons, he's trying to get it out of you. He's trying to get you to loosen up. You know, joking, pop culture references.
He got the president to listen.
He's responding, and I'm just like, oh God.
No, Simmons got the president to loosen up the other day. You know, he got the president Obama to loosen up.
Yeah. Bill Simmons did. So, and John Wall's just not budging, and you know. With athletes, you get all types of personalities, and there's personalities that are more open to the media than, you know, and there's other people that just take it as a job, and I don't know if John Wall feels that way too. I know he's definitely camera shy. You know, he's admitted as well that he's shy. But at the same time, he probably just feels like, you know, I'm just doing my due work here, you know, playing the game, playing it the right way. Or trying to, at least, you know, and I address it to the media and tell them what they need to hear, what he feels we need to hear, and that's it. Because you're right, as soon as those cameras shut off, you know, he's joking, he's cracking on somebody, and you know, rapping, you know,
yeah, so he loves to rap around,
and I love that about him too. You know, I've never really had a conversation with him like, you know, more than 30 seconds, but you know, I've seen the way he interacts with everyone else, and I totally agree with you. I think he needs to show some of that in front of the camera, and I also agree that he's probably not doing that because he's so wary of his perception. He's always been the kind of guy that's always had to deflect scrutiny, whether it's warranted or not, and part of that's being a Washington Wizard, to be honest. No one's taking you really serious, you know, and that's unfortunate for John because he had to go through, like you mentioned, had to go through 2 years with the worst roster in the league, probably, you know? And everyone's expecting, you know, oh, John Wall, first round draft pick, what is he doing? Winning 30 games. Yep. You know, can't average 20 points per game. He's not a scorer.
Can't shoot, you know? Right?
And John Wall isn't a scorer. So not being a scorer and having to dish the ball to other guys that aren't scorers, all that takes a toll on you. In terms of perception especially. So he's dealing with that as well. And now, I've seen spurts of Wall, not so much in front of the media, but on the court, kind of really, you've seen him with the whole mouthpiece and biting the mouthpiece, sticking out of his mouth. That's something new.
Yeah.
And when I saw that this year, I'm like, okay, John's kind of trying to show himself off a little bit. Like, oh, I just said I'm supposed to be an MVP. So, you know, I'm going to walk around with my mouthpiece out of my mouth. You know, he never did that before. This is his fifth year. So I can see some of that persona on the court changing a little bit, feeling like he's the boss, like he's the man, and I love that. That's the way it should be if you're a superstar and all-star. But I think he needs to give that to the media a little bit. Well, let's get to know John Wall a little bit, because you're right. He's a student of the game. He'll break down a play down to the T. He'll tell you what happened, what should have happened, what didn't happen, why it happened. And that's where it ends.
Well, Dan Fagan and his representative, if you're listening, this is the kind of advice that we'd like to give here on the podcast. That's free. It's free advice for your representatives out there to give to John. But give me the John Wall that's cracking on Dion Waiters, that's talking about fashion, that's cracking on J.R. Smith. You know, it's like giving him the razz. You know, kind of how Obama does. Obama gives that little like razz or like. You know, talk some smack a little bit, you know, instead of just some corporate answers. But I digress. But let's transition to his backcourt mate, Mr. Bradley Beal. What has been your take of his game this season? What have you seen out of him?
I think he's been absolutely great. Aside from, you know, that injury that kind of probably, you know, pulled him a little bit, you know, had him regress a little bit. Coming back, but before that, he was averaging almost 25 a night. He was shooting the ball a lot better. He was getting to the line. I think even the last game, or the game before, I think against Toronto,
yeah, got to the line 10 times. Yeah.
You know, so he's showing a little bit of regression. I mean, we're still getting warmed up here with the season. I think we're again slowly closing out on that phase of the season. So, but I think what I've seen from Bradley Beal. And what I feel like he can build on, based on what I've seen from him so far, is great. I think he's shooting the ball well. He's definitely looking behind the three-point line a lot more, taking those step-back threes, jab step, a little take to the rim. he's still shooting his long twos, his mid-range jumpers, but again, he's a shooter. He's going to do that. He's going to find those shots. He believes he can make those shots. He wants to be the player that we're not going to harp on him for taking, you know, a long two. Obviously, he's not looking for the long two, but if that's the space the defense gives him, he's going to take it with the full confidence that he's going to make the shot. He's been making those shots. Again, when healthy. Still concerned about that health, though. He's still falling awkwardly every other play, and you're holding your breath when he's done, when you're crashing down on the baseline on one leg and, like, you know, looks like a flamingo and, like, oh, God, you know? What is he going to twist now? And he rolls on an ankle. I mean, part of it's bad.
I think he's part Wolverine, actually, because some of these injuries he actually comes back from. That the ones I think are tragic.
Which is also a good sign, you know? Fortunately, the shoulder injury kind of took him out for a couple games. It happens. But he's still young. He's still getting stronger. He's still probably not completely, you know, aware of how to move his body at certain times. You know, it's all a learning process, and you know, you live with it. And you, but I'm totally not concerned with Bradley Beal. As long as he stays healthy, I've seen his reformed presence on the floor, and I think it's going in the right direction.
So my critique of Bradley, it's kind of the same one in the sense that the long twos and not getting the free throw line enough. Now, he did get the free throw line against Toronto more, but at the end of the game, once again, I saw him deferring to go back to that game. And also, I know his injury caught him off of rhythm because he was sensational. He was top five in scoring, I think, the first seven games before he got to his injury. So is that, and if his brothers are listening, which they're probably not, don't beat me up because I think both of you could kill me very, very easily. I'm just joking. They're both nice guys. But one's a bodybuilder, and his arms are bigger than my head, I think. But once again, it's like, okay, he focuses on, over the offseason, like, hey, I need to shoot more threes. I need to cut these long twos out of a game. I need to get to the line more. And his free throw rate is similar, if not worse. And I still see these long twos. I feel like every time I see this long contested two, because I'm okay with the two that comes that's open. It's the same thing I will harp on. Where it's like, hey, you know, it looks on the thing like, oh, there's a 20-footer, there's a 20-footer. No, there's a difference between these two 20-footers when you look on the stat sheet, the ones that are contested, or it's just him being like, you know, I don't feel like driving right now. I'm a good shooter. I'm just going to shoot this 20-footer. Right. Well, you know what? Every NBA can do that every time. It drives me up the wall. It makes me think of, like, when I see an ex like hanging out with a new boy and like she's smiling, having a good time. It's not a good feeling, man. It's just like, really? You know, you're like, no, you should be having a bad time. You know, you should be like missing me or whatever, you know? Or like, oh yeah, you know? I mean, you wish your ex as well. But you know, there's this little personal feeling like, oh yeah, oh, see? Well, I mean, as a human you do. Well, it depends how bad the breakup is, I guess, right? But for the most part, you know, I don't get too much of the pettiness of that. But still, it's just like this emotional feeling like, again, dude, haven't we went over this? Like, why are you going back to reversing? Now, once again, this could be a little anecdotal and once again, an emotional reaction of me because it's, and I know he's still trying to adjust out of this. But sometimes when it's like, all right, you know what's up, and now you continue to go back to that.
There is a maturity level that's factoring in to Bradley Beal and his certain decision making on offense and his shot selection. I think, and a lot of that we see in his indecisions, like the ones where he's not driving the ball when he certainly has the lane to do it, and instead, you know, pulling up for a 20-footer. Those are unfortunate shooter instincts. For a guy who, and we know Beal has the utmost confidence in himself. We've heard it on a different level this year where he feels unguardable, feels unstoppable.
I mean, he's in a contract year too, right?
And he's on a contract year, so he's probably, again, like Wall, probably trying to do too much offensively, trying to be somebody that he's not yet become. And I think that's something that we have to kind of fight through for him to fight through. But those two things that you mentioned, you know, the lack of free throws and still those elusive long two shots that you wish he wouldn't take or that he had a better shot of taking, I think we can probably live with as long as he continues to stay aggressive. I think, you know, with Bradley Beal, I swear, I feel like making a post where I'm just vining all of his fourth quarter plays from the past two playoff series where he's just dominating the floor, where you see this fire in his eyes, where he's telling Kyle Lowry, you can't F with me. That's how he needs to play all these fourth quarters, these last 6 minutes of these games, because the Wizards are counting on that. What, you know, people don't mention it, but that's what the Wizards are counting on these types of players to step up late in these games. Bradley Beal wants to be that guy. You want to be an all-star. These are the league pass alert plays where people are like, oh, the Wizards are down. Bradley Beal's got the ball. Let's see what he does. He's got to show more of that.
See, and I didn't see it in the Pacers game. The second half, he shot poorly. Right. And I thought he deferred too much, obviously, in the Raptors game. So I'm a little down on Bradley, but you are correct in the fact that of all the issues going on with this team, Bradley Beal is very low on the totem pole. And so let's go to the one that is very prevalent on the totem pole, and that is the four position. So now they want to play small. They want to modernize the offense. And once again, I continually talk about this thing every podcast, and I'm sure the listeners don't want to hear it again, but you're a new guest, the four spot. Now, we've seen the last week that, you know, we've seen Humphreys try to play the small ball, shoot more threes, mixed results. I'm a little, you know, once again, another caveat, you got to say, hey, there's got to be a transition. You can't just hammer Chris Humphreys, who's played, you know, over a decade in this league, and now he's shooting threes. He never has done this, and why he can't figure it out right away, just like anything else in your life, right? You're doing web design. Now you're doing graphic design. You're doing, hey, why aren't you a great graphic designer right now? Or you're a writer. Why are you, you know, good at these things? You're transitioning to any type of work environment when you're getting new responsibilities. There's going to be a, you know, a lag time of you figuring things out. That doesn't mean that you cannot figure it out, okay? Take that income. But take that note. We're going to put that note in. But we've seen that it has not worked out as a unit. Humphreys, defensively, maybe he's just a scapegoat because it's easy to poke on him being the new starter at the four, because I don't think, you know, to go from not playing in the playoffs versus Atlanta to now him basically playing the four, he's starting and shooting all his threes is kind of weird. You know, especially for most fans, I've had multiple people say that to me, that point. It's a very valid point. But now we've seen Jared Dudley, who, you know, recovering from back surgery and kind of transitioning. The team has been better with him on the court. The stats back this up. The on-off numbers are way better with Dudley on the court. Whitman finally moves him into the starting lineup. Your thoughts on that decision, your thoughts on Humph, and just where this team is at in this fourth spot, because I still feel that this is the defining kind of thing for this offense to basically move forward, or this team's identity for the season.
I agree. And I'll just put it right out there. Dudley's the guy at the four, and I'll explain why. Yes, Chris Humphreys, this is, you know, a transition for him. This is something new, a new job task.
You like my job task?
The work environment, you know, metaphor. But let's face it, Humphreys was plugged in as the starting four, as this new stretch four, based on one sole dimension, and that was his improved three-point shot, which comes at the expense of pretty much virtually no other offensive presence besides that slow developing three-point shot where he's, you know, he's almost squaring up the ball where he's spinning it for the right grip before he let. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
When he receives the ball behind the three-point line off a kickout pass or a cross-court pass, he's literally, I feel like he's looking at the ball to make sure it's the, you know, the laces are in the right position over on his fingers.
Oh, no.
For him to release the ball. It's that slow. And the only reason why it's been successful is because it's actually a really improved shot. And I'm going to take that away from Chris. I'm very pleasantly surprised that he can actually extend his range that far. And I think the rest of the NBA fan base is also surprised. They've never seen this before. I commend him for that. But when that takes away from anything, because he's too slow to kind of...
Oh, the dribble drives? They drive me insane. They drive me insane.
He has no plan B. Once that three-point shot is closed out by defender, there's nothing else left to do besides try to dribble drive and look like a fool, travel, or somehow get the ball out of his hands, and it'll either end up on the opponent's hands or luckily in somebody else's hands, but that's where it ends. And what we miss, what we sacrifice, is the Chris Humphreys that crashes the board, that sets great off the ball screens, that finds those cutters on the baseline or finds himself on the baseline, put back, you know, offensive glass. I mean, Chris Humphreys was great when it came to second chance opportunities for the Wizards. We've lost that. I think that's probably part of the offensive regression too, because Chris Humphries is totally out of position just because of a newly developed 3-point shot that's not really that great either. It's okay. It's been decent. You put in Jared Dudley. Jared Dudley's a better 3-point shooter. He's been shooting 3-pointers all his career. And on top of that, he can move with the ball. He can move off the ball. He doesn't really he doesn't hit a dead end when defenders close out on him when he wants to take a jump shot. And honestly, he's better off the ball, so he's in better position to catch and shoot more than Chris Humphries is. Defensively, Jared Dudley is all over the place. His awareness on the floor. He knows where to put his body on the floor on defense, where to impact the ball handler, where to help, where not to help. So I think, you know, Dudley's obviously not the main group. You know, you mentioned that this is the most critical element of the Wizards and how they move into this new system, this new style. And it certainly is, I think, a very important aspect. But I don't, you know, I think, I don't know if Dudley's going to make or break, you know, where the Wizards go from here on out, but he's definitely the guy over Humphries.
I mean, I think that he's been a bright spot in this 1-4 week. Like his play, even in the Celtics game, I think he played well. I thought he played well with the Raptors. It's not like he's quick off the dribble, but he's in more control. And defensively, you know, it's not like he's obviously some guy that's going to be a lockdown defender, but he's always kind of going to be in the right position. He's going to defend. He kind of reminds me of how Paul Pierce used to defend as well a little bit, where Paul Pierce had lost a step, obviously, but Paul Pierce would always be able to funnel his man into Gortat, into Nene, back to Wall. And there was like, yeah, one-on-one, he's never going to win that matchup on a one-on-one isolation on the wing. But he was able to play team principles defense like very, very well. And I think that's where Dudley is better, is more comfortable doing that when you have Humphries out there doing that. Do you think that you should be able to vine, you say when Humphries lines the ball up and shoot, you should vine Whitman's body language at the same time? I'd love to see like a, like when Humphries is getting ready to shoot, because I think even though he makes them, Whitman still is just not really.
Well, you want to see Whitman's reaction?
No, just the body language of Whitman as Humphries like gets ready to line up a shot, because still, even though they go in, I think it'd be a great dichotomy to have both of those combined.
Oh, yeah. I'll see what I can do, but I'm so glad you actually noticed what I'm talking about. It's so funny.
But here's my one concern while we finish up this position, Dudley. His injury and how, you know, as much as I don't think Humphries playing the four is sustainable long term, and I think maybe, honestly, I think some of the Wizards' best lineups might be at Otto at the four, especially late in the game, closing out. I think we saw that a little bit on, I guess, the Raptors. I think Otto played four. They actually went Otto four in sessions. They had a sessions, which then again, I'm bitching about that women didn't sub him out on defense at the end. But I think that he was going to go with sessions there with the three-guard lineup with Otto at the four and Gortat. It's just his health. Like, they coming off of back surgery. He's kind of older. We need him for the playoff run. You know, we need him for the longer run. How concerned are you of maybe burning him out early, especially with, we're going to go into the current injury depth situation here in just about 5 minutes. Should I be concerned or worried about Dudley, or how much can you kind of manage those minutes?
I think you put up, you bring up a really good point. It's not something I really dwelled on.
Because of struggling, right? You know, and he's kind of getting his legs.
But it is a fair point, and it is something that we should at least consider. And it kind of reflects back on, you know, the treatment of Paul Pierce last year too, playing at the four. You know, preserving him and coming off the back injury. You know, Pierce was just him being old, but with Dudley obviously coming off a back injury, which is pretty critical. You can re-injure a back at any given point, really. You can tweak it in any certain type of way, and you're out for 3 weeks. I think Otto needs to kind of prove himself a little bit more before we kind of really commit to him at the four. How strong is he? It's also, you know,
matchups, right?
What's that?
Matchups, right? I mean, the Raptors are good matchups. They're playing Carroll at the four, so.
There are certain teams that will go as small at the four position where Otto can match up well. You know, Otto obviously doesn't really attain a lot of strength. He's working on it, obviously, but he's still not, you know, really gotten over that line where he's actually able to put up some muscle against some of these forwards. As far as offensively, I think Otto is great at the four. He can move around. He can crash the glass. He can extend out for a corner three. I think his shot is great. I love Otto's offense. I really do. I think he bails us out of a lot of possessions with some good shots, with some good, you know, just some key plays that allow the offense to kind of continue moving. Offensively, I'm not too concerned about Otto. It's on the defensive end. Even this year, Otto hasn't played that well defensively, really. You know, I don't want to put all the blame on him on, you know, with Melo going off and George going off, but a bulk of those minutes on defense was Otto guarding these guys.
But it comes into it, like Otto played so well against Toronto in the Toronto playoff series. Otto was getting a lot of accolades for how well he played defense.
The Toronto series last year was where we really felt like, okay, Otto is
turn the corner. On the defensive side, right?
Pretty much utilize that three or four spot because of how hard he plays. So I think maybe, you know, I don't want to burn out Dudley, but I do want to hold off on committing to Otto at the four. I say we should plug Otto in at the four a lot, you know, more often than we have at different parts of the game, just to see how he matches up with other power forwards in the league. Before we kind of figure out whether or not we can kind of sustain him at that position for the duration of the season. I'd like to. I really would.
Let's get a segue. Otto spent the summer in Poland with a guy named Marcin Gortat. He was in a tank. They did some travels. Of course, I asked Otto about this on media day, and he gave me like a 30-second answer, even when I asked him about food. I was like, really, Otto? I think my questions were longer than your actual answers. I was like, come on, man. Like, this media day. Give me something here.
I try to break out some of that media day, too. He did say that Gortat was like the Obama of Poland.
Yeah, he did.
You know, the president. And I think that was the biggest takeaway for Otto, was just being in awe of Gortat's like immaculate presence in Poland. I guess it really is that big. I mean, you know.
Well, I think he does want to run for office someday. But let's get into Mr. Marcin Gortat. So once again, let's just start about his season. And I think it kind of comes back to what you mentioned last year, is that, or mentioned earlier about last season, where he was in this funk, right? It actually was on the Polish Pride Day that I cover every year. Somehow I end up interviewing and seeing these cheerleaders and Polish Day, and he had a terrible game. It was actually his game where he had his Super Gortat action hero night. I think he got in foul trouble, had 4 points and 3 rebounds, and it was a terrible, terrible game. Now, granted, he stayed afterwards and, you know, talked in Polish to his people, and they love him, and it's pretty awesome to actually be. It's one of my favorite events that I've covered for him. And then after the season, he comes out with food poisoning in game 6 of the playoffs, doesn't play. Actually, Mr. KS Life, give a shout out to KS Life, played a hell of a game.
That was the night Gortat dined in hell.
Yeah, supposedly. So Gortat's, we're wondering, why the hell is Gortat not in there at the end of the game? Somehow he got food poisoning. Maybe, I think he joked that some Atlanta fan gave him food poisoning. Okay, fine. I've ate some bad food. That sucks. But you are the $65 million center, and this is the elimination game. And the guy that everyone that's not even on the team actually had to kind of bail you out, which kind of gets overlooked in that game, because we just all talk about that Paul Pierce 3 in the corner. And so that kind of overlooks what some other aspects of why the Wizards actually lost that game and were unable to force a game 7. But Mr. Gortat is very candid. So at the end of the season, which you referenced earlier, he talks about how he had personal problems, multiple. Well, first it sounded like maybe it was a legal issue, and then, so then people were like, "Are you, did something happen like legally?" Yeah. Then there was some media, some Wiz work PR people were like, "No, it's nothing legal. You know, it's just Gortat being Gortat saying this stuff." But then Gortat but he just wants to be candid. Okay, so this is what my beef with Gortat is, that he'd be candid up to a point. But then he doesn't want to actually. So he wants all the accolades and all the good stuff of just being real, being a bro, you know, being telling you what's up. But when he says some stuff, you're like, okay, well, what's up with that? Oh no, I can't tell you any more about that. I was like, no, that's not how it works. Like, you don't get to pick and choose. Like, if you want to say what's up, I mean, I understand. Then you just don't say anything, right? Like, it's not like you either don't say anything. But if you're gonna go there, then you gotta go. You basically kind of go all the way there. And do you think?
Maybe not. I mean.
I you don't have to tell me, but you can't say, like, oh, I played bad because this thing happened to me. And this thing happened to me. Like, well, is this thing going to happen to you again? I mean, those are the follow-up questions. Like, what is this thing?
Well, yeah, you know? And I thought he addressed it fairly. I mean, I think athletes are humans, too. And I think they have the right to, you know, disclose as much as they want or not want to. Gortat's a very emotional guy. Super emotional. I mean, about as emotional as John Wall, maybe more. I think he wears his heart on his sleeve.
Very sensitive. Very sensitive. Very sensitive, too.
Very sensitive. And he kicks himself in the ass a lot.
Yes.
And I like that about Gortat. I like guys that can acknowledge their shortcomings and commit to making up for them and getting better. And Gortat is one of those guys. I think Gortat, and part of that is Gortat will, you know, he'll tell you, you know, I played bad. I admit I played bad. This is why I played bad. It was personal reasons. Does he need to explain his personal reasons? Probably not. You know, we don't know what it is. It could be trouble with a woman, trouble with a guy. I don't know. The Polish mafia, he owes money to the Polish mafia. I don't know, you know? And so I respect that he doesn't want to disclose all of that, but, and I think that's all he needs to do is kind of just say, you know I played bad. I was in a funk. I was in a position I didn't want to be, and I commit to never being in that position again. And I think that's how he answered it on media day, because he was being badgered by a reporter about what it was that was bothering him last season. And I think I thought he was going to snap at some point.
Yeah, I was next to the guy.
The guy had like three follow-up questions.
Yeah, he's ready to get it, actually.
So you're sure you're not going to tell us what was it, you know? I'm just like, oh, God, guy, like, just give him a break. He's not going to tell you.
Oh, I have that on video. You can actually see that online. I have that.
What's that?
I had this encounter on video, by the way. Yeah. So, on YouTube.
That's Gortat at his peak emotions. Now, you kind of take that down a couple levels and square on Gortat during a game. And he's the same way. I think that how Gortat starts a game sets the tone for how he'll play throughout the rest of the game. I've said this before. I've written about it. When you get Gortat going early in the first quarter and he's making those hook shots and you're doing a little pick and roll and he's crashing the glass, maybe gets a block, you know, draws a foul, makes his free throws, it's a good night for Gortat.
Yeah, individually. I agree, engage him early.
And, you know, on the contrary, when he's not having that kind of a start, when he's missing a buddy, and you'll see the Wizards try to. I think the Wizards actually go in to a game with the mindset of, let's get Gortat going. Let's run the offense through him. Let's run the post. Let's run a pick and roll. Let's see where his mind is. Let's see where his body language is. Let's see how he's reacting to this, you know, to this attention. And if it goes well, you continue to feed him. He plays well. He'll get 17-9, 17-10, you know, and it's a good night, probably a good night for the Wizards as well. But then he'll go through a bad start, and it takes a toll on him, and it kind of wears down on him. And it's a trickle effect, you know. He kind of sometimes doesn't recover from it. And then you'll hear him in the post game, and he's kicking his own ass about it. You know, he's pointing out his faults and saying he sucks, getting really emotional about it. So, with Gortat this year, and, you know, we heard his quote
I'm about to get into this. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So speaking of post game of what Gortat had, so after the Raptors game, this is what Gortat had to say. I was not there. You were not there. So I don't know what actually the question was to begin this. I'm sure it was. I haven't checked to see if Monumental actually edited this out on their website. My odds are that they did. But I don't want to rip on Monumental yet. I will check the video. But this is what Gortat said. It's not easy, but we got to cut the negativity out. We have coming from players, coaches, staff, and media. We just got to cut that. It's not even fun coming here anymore. There's so much negativity. I understand we're losing games, but damn, we just got to cut that right now, man. It's not fun at all. Everyone felt that we're going to go high. We're going to go to the conference finals and stuff like that. We didn't make any particular trades or signings in the offseason. So it's not like we're supposed to be a three times much better team this year. That's some Polish translation right there. We lost Paul Pierce, a guy who was a great leader and experienced player. And we signed three players that they delivered good stuff to the table for us. But at the end of the day, they are not all-stars. So expectations are high, and we are not up there. Okay, let's just stop before I go on, because there's more quotes. So basically, he says he's not having fun. Everyone's to blame. The fans, you. Well, he didn't say the fans, but I feel like the fans, coaches, staff, media, the media, we're to blame for this not having fun. And he says we're losing. Damn. And then he goes and just kind of throws the front office and, okay, he throws the front office. Actually, I'm not going to say under the bus. I hate that term. He basically just rips on the front office, the players they signed, and the coaching staff, all in two paragraphs here. Your thoughts on that before we go to the
end? He's a super blunt guy. I mean, he really doesn't hold back on his thoughts. He tries to sugarcoat him a little bit. Or he'll tell you no comment, and you'll know exactly how he feels anyways. So he'll harp on anyone if he feels they deserve it. The team is just not playing well right now. Like he said, the expectations were super high going into the season, and frankly, they're not living up to it right now. And so as he's talking and he's going through his emotions and it's spilling out. You know, he starts blurting out things like the stuff about the front office and the players they replaced Paul Pierce with, and, you know, saying these guys aren't, you know, playing up to the level that we expect.
He's basically saying they suck and they're not any good. Like...
I mean, seriously, you know, yeah. So, there's no denying that Gortat will say how he feels. The negativity or harping about the negativity and blaming the media and the coaches and staff about it. You know, I understand where he's coming from, I guess. There is a lot of negativity. Again, the Wizards were expected to go to the conference finals this year with two games under 500. So somebody's going to be targeted as the scapegoat. In Gortat's case, it's everyone, you know what I mean? And I'm sure he's including himself as well, too. I don't know exactly what he's asking for.
These are nonsensical. Okay, that's my. Is he correct in what he's saying, or is he making any points?
I think he's correct in saying that there's no there's some negativity. I mean that's how it's going to be when you're 6-8 and you're supposed to be, you know,
you lost four in a row. You're getting blown out. You're getting embarrassed.
Four in a row, and like you said, you mentioned earlier, demoralizing losses each in their own way. You know. You completely collapse against Charlotte. You get blown out against Boston. You get blown up against the Pacers. You lose in the last second shot to Corey Joseph and the Raptors. Those are demoralizing losses. It's naturally going to be negative. So I'm not really sure what Gortat's really asking for us to kind of, you know, put on a mask and pretend like we're, you know, everything's all fine and dandy. It really isn't.
I know he likes to retweet you guys. I mean, have you been overly negative? Have you been overly negative on your Twitter feed? Is that right?
We like to be on this good side because, hey, I'm not gonna lie, we enjoy the Polish demographic. He gives it to us. He'll retweet us a lot. And
a lot of page views coming from Poland.
Happy to keep you entertained.
A lot of page views coming from Poland.
Well, yeah, when he retweets us, we'll see it. People are like, oh wow, what's, you know, my phone will just randomly go off and I'll have like 100 Twitter notifications. I'm like, Jamie Martin again right now in the middle of a movie.
Yeah. He's like not even showered up. He's like retweeting you from his phone in the locker room. He's like, oh yeah.
I swear he retweeted us right before tip off one time. I think right before they came out of the tunnel. And he retweeted us. I'm like, really, Martin? Yeah.
What are you doing?
He's a fan. We enjoy him as a fan. He's a cool guy. I think he's extremely blunt. I think he tells it like it is. It's just how he feels. You can't control how somebody feels. He feels the negativity. It's making him feel like he's not having fun. Unfortunately, that he has to get over it. It's, you know, the media is going to be negative.
Yeah.
When the team is bad, we're going to ask you questions that aren't very happy ones. But you know, if you want us to not be negative, then, you know, win some games. You know, show us how not to be negative.
Well, here's my issue. Here's my issue with these quotes. Aside from them just being Gortat, and I know that you, I guess we differ. I think you say that he takes a lot of responsibility. I feel like sometimes he he takes some and then blames others. So I think that his canonness takes a lot of like, oh, I need to play better, I need to this, and then he just dumps on all these other people. So as long as he says off the bat that he did something bad, and then he just ends up most of the time spending like ripping on like never like individually people. Even that's why I find this one bizarre, that he basically calls his teammates not all-stars, which no one thought Gary Neal and Jared Dudley were all-stars to begin with. Like, where did you think that? Anyway, my point is, like, 2 weeks ago, okay, when the Wizards were struggling, had lost when their mini lull, their first mini lull, when they got blown out by the Hawks and the Celtics, and they asked him, I think it was J. Michael asked him about, like, oh, you know, how's your day? You know, this losing streak. He's like, oh, my check came in. Today was a great day. I was like, today was a great day. And I was like, okay, so, and that's fine. I find it a funny answer. He actually retweeted J. Michael, who quoted him. So that's actually, I found the quote, is that Marchand had retweeted J. Michael's quote. So because I couldn't find it, because I don't even know if anyone wrote an article about it. And so I was like, where is this quote? I go on his Twitter account, his Twitter page. I find the quote from 3 weeks ago, the other day. So then I'm like, okay, I did. Okay, so you're saying it's not fun. And when you were asked 2 weeks ago about losing, you said it doesn't matter because you're getting fucking paid. And now 2 weeks later, everyone's to blame. And so I'm like, okay, listen, I'm not the kind of guy that gets mad about athletes making money because, you know, Star Wars last I heard, Star Wars is going to get $50 million in pre-sale tickets for Star Wars, right? It's entertainment money. I never get, like, you make money what people are willing to pay you. You know, like, I never get upset about athletes making money. But when you kind of just don't tell people, it's not a good look. You know what I mean? Like,
he's definitely a joker.
But don't talk, fans are never going to, fans don't give.
Tyler's here to rub it in about a game check. I think he was really kind of just fending off the question about the team losing.
Oh, there's some context probably that is missing, right?
So he's kind of like, oh, yeah, you know, whatever. At least my check's coming in. at this point, the money's the only thing that matters at this point because we're not winning games.
Which is fine, dude. I'm not against that. Like, but then 2 weeks later, don't go and ether all your teammates in the front office.
Yeah, I get it. His emotions are all over the place. And I think his art's kind of controlling them. Based on how the game goes.
Okay, we're not done with Marchand. One more quote. So this is what he says. It's tough, also because it's the system we play. Four outside, one inside. I'm by myself in there fighting for rebounds, and usually we got two, three guys inside the paint. So it's a little bit different without Nene being at the four. Jared is a different player. He's giving a lot to the team, and I love to play with him. But just as Jared is giving us offensively great opportunities, we are suffering on the rebounds a little bit. It is what it is. Oh God, I hate that quote. I mean, geez, what the worst quote ever in sports. But just because we just can't be negative about everything right now. That is the worst thing we can do. I saw some headlines that he's basically saying he wants to play with Nene again. Which, by the way, do you know that him and Nene have not played 1 minute on the court together?
Oh yeah, I know.
Kyle tweeted that out the other day. I didn't know that. Which is fine. I'm not against that. I thought it was bizarre that he's played with like Blair, not Nene. You know, and I think Nene is actually done okay as a backup big. How much is he correct in any of this? I don't even know what he's saying here. Like, he doesn't want to be the only big inside, even though he was the one in the post game last year saying how him and Nene probably shouldn't play together anymore, that they should go small.
Is it just him being frustrated and not making sense? I think with Gortat, it's a couple things that are kind of mounting up his frustration, and so he's kind of just pinpointing it at different, you know, areas. I think that with Gortat, I think it just boils down to getting him involved in the capacity that he needs to be involved in. I don't know if you've noticed, but I think the Wizards have really, really toned down the amount of pick and roll that they play with Gortat. That's his bread and butter offensively, really, is to screen and roll to the basket and crash it with the ball. And that's something that they've totally gone away from, specifically with him and Wall. I think it could be the best pick and roll in the league. It certainly looked like it when they run it, you know, to 100%, and we just haven't seen it at all. And I think that's kind of bothered him as well, because he's kind of been a little bit, to a certain degree, kind of phased out of the offense with this whole run and gun and fast pace and, you know, pace and space system that got going on. You know, as far as being having help down low, is he talking about on the defensive end or on the offensive end? Because I don't know how he expects that to be corrected. I mean, when you're playing a small lineup, you're going to have four guys around the perimeter and one down in the middle. Yeah, should there be certain players crashing to the glass and certain players going back on defense? Yeah, okay, sure. But the bottom line is that he's complaining about everyone else being negative. He's the one that's saying everything that everyone else really isn't saying as much. He's just going down the line from play calling to, you know, style of play to who's on the floor to who got signed and all this and that. And so I think, you know, that's just the way Gortat is. I think when things aren't going right, when he's not involved as much as he wants to be, he's going to start harping. He's going to start yapping about it. And you never know what you're going to get out of these quotes.
No, and I think that you hit it right on the nail with Gortat being the offense needing to be getting him the ball on the move, getting him in some spaces, especially early, like you mentioned, and then him and Wall, and then him and Beal, too, because 2 years ago when Beal had his really good playoffs, him and Gortat against the Pacers and against the Bulls, him and Gortat really had that two-man game going. Last year, I thought it slipped a little bit, but I think him and Wall kind of really had that two-man game going, because I think that really is kind of still their best offensive, you know, aside from maybe Beal or Wall and clear outs. I don't know how much Beal can really create off the dribble aside from, you know, creating those 18-footers I bitched about earlier. You know, Wall really isn't a 1-4 kind of guy on a consistent basis either. So they kind of need him and Gortat to really kind of open up that offense, especially when they're going to space out. So where they help out, if they sag on John, then he kicks it to a shooter, an Otto in the corner, you know, or Chris Humphreys, or, you know, or whoever is playing, Gary Neal, like whoever's, you know, being spaced out to shooting. And that really centers around Gortat and Wall running that high pick and roll really effectively. And I don't think we haven't really seen, I mean, we've seen flashes of it, but I think that is really kind of indicative of kind of some of the struggles that the offense have had. And maybe that's what he's kind of frustrated about when he's not actually saying that. Because to me, I think that's maybe his legitimate beef. When it comes on the defensive end, I mean, do you think, is Ibaka bitching that Durant's out at playing four? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like is when Draymond Green's out at the four, is Bogut bitching? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't know if they, or LeBron's playing the four, is Tristan Thompson bitching that he's the only one that rebounds? I mean, I think that's just kind of the nature. That's just like the sacrifice you have to make in this new NBA that you want to do. Now, if you're just being too candid for candid's sakes, I think some of this we have to, you know, take for granted or, you know, ingest a little bit. And we've already talked too much about Gortat, but the last story that I want to talk to you before we go is probably the biggest story of the week, aside from, you know, the mess that's happening on the court that we've dissected, is Martell Webster basically being waived from the team. Martell Webster was, you know, went down with an injury. We've discussed, we've went over it. Basically, the team was able to get a player exception, which allowed the team to essentially waive him. He gets his money for this year, $5.6 million this year, and then he'll get, I think he gets $2.5 million next year. Unless he's claimed off of waivers, which basically probably won't happen, pretty much ends his Wizards career, which like we expected. The Wizards immediately signed Ryan Hollins, a veteran, to a non-guaranteed minimum contract. The trade exception allows them to spend, here, I'm reading it right, that allows them to use $2.7 million later on a player at the season. They basically had to waive Webster to create a roster spot for Hollins. Hollins basically has a non-guaranteed contract that is guaranteed in January. So if Hollins, they can still get rid of Hollins if that doesn't work out. The Wizards, obviously, I think we haven't really touched on. I mean, we kind of touched on playing small. They kind of, I think, we're missing another big that they kind of needed, especially with now Nene hurt with a calf. Blair is obviously undersized. They got Humphreys kind of playing out of position. They kind of needed a big, especially for fouls. You know, Marchand picks up a couple fouls early. The Wizards really were lacking on depth on the front court. before we get into what it means for the roster and kind of how the team kind of makeup of the team now, just Martell. Yeah. You've covered Martell for years. Me and Kyle and Rashad last podcast, we ended up having a depressing conversation about Martell. Just your thoughts on Martell, what it was like to cover him over these years, and sure. Just through it all, and what you'd like to say about
Martell. Martell was an absolute gem in that locker room and on that team. And you know, like you mentioned, you know, we've covered this team for quite some time now. I've covered them right at the end of right towards the end of the Crawford, McGee, Blatch era of the Wizards locker room. And just seeing the way the culture transitioned from that group of, you know, players to a guy like Martell, it was instant fun. You know, Martell had a great season that first year. He was shooting shots. The Wizards were playing well. But just, he was a locker room staple. He was the difference in the locker room culture. And he was a great presence. He was always joking. He was laughing. He was cracking on his teammates, cracking on the media. This one time, he loved picking on Trevor Booker. And one time, Trevor Booker's in the showers. And Martell saw a pair of boots that Booker had in his locker. And like these old run-down black boots looked like somebody was in a pile of rubble in them or something. And he picks up the boot by like his two fingers, like throws it in the middle of the locker room, like on the floor, and he's like, "All right, guys, Trevor Booker's ready for your questions." You know, just doing stuff like that, trolling, you know, other interviews, you know, trolling, video bombing Garrett Temple. You know, we have that clip on YouTube. You know, Mike Prada from Bullets Forever, you know, is my guy, but he'll probably remember when Martell went off on him, because I guess Mike didn't know who Doug was. Doug from Nickelodeon.
Oh, man, I wish I had a clip of that.
I think Martell had some Nickelodeon shirt on, and he was asking the media about, you know, some character or something, and Mike didn't really know how to respond. And Martell's like, you don't know who Doug is? He's like, what's wrong with you? You know, but it was all fun, you know? So, and he did things like that. So, he was a great presence. You know, he was a positive vibe. He always joked, kept smiles on people's faces. Just kind of like that, just that glimmer of light in the locker room, even when they won or lost. But when they lost, though, he would hide. He would shy away. He'd get dressed and walk right out of the locker room. He had nothing to say. Because I guess he didn't want people to see that depressed side of him. So I love Martell. I'm going to miss him a lot.
Now, what did you see from his career? Like, as in the struggle, well, you mentioned the high. It's almost like his Wizards career almost kind of paralleled his basketball career. You know, coming out of high school, drafted out of high school, phenom. I think he had a couple decent years with Portland. Injuries, bounced around a little bit. He was on the scrap heap. Signs late in training camp with the Wizards, not really a non-guaranteed contract, has an amazing year, shot I believe 41-42% from threes. John Wall finding him all over the court. They sign him to that contract, which is what they're going to have to pay out. Now it kind of doesn't look as bad of a deal because of how the salary cap's going to be. I still kind of question the move a little bit. I understand why they did it, because there's a locker room presence. I don't know if they needed to go 5 years like they did. I think they could have maybe got him for 3 or 4. You know, guaranteed 3 maybe, instead of going to the 4-5, 4-4.5 essentially. But then the injuries hit again at the Wizards. His defense slipped. Then last year he couldn't make a shot. And then now this year he goes and tragically works all summer, cuts off 20 pounds, and then he gets injured like the second or third practice to some weird hip injury where he's wearing glasses to correct it, and I don't really understand that all, but then he tried and tried, and finally, and to his credit, I mean, dude, the last thing I saw of him was celebrating three-pointers during the Bucks game 2 weeks ago with Allen Anderson doing three-point dances. And here it is, and the next day it's announced that he's out for the year and his career is over. I mean, and that's why I kind of feel sad in a way, because I also saw his personality change when he started playing bad. He kind of went back into, we call it emo Martell. I think we even said a bunch of stuff online. Like, he wasn't
completely went into a shell.
Yeah, he wasn't like. I mean, I remember when his first year, he'd be on Twitter and be like, "Hey, give me some questions," and then now he would never tweet. He would just do these quotes, and now I felt like he was, his personality still was there. I had a really good conversation with him, and I still might put, I probably should do a podcast and put it up about his rap album that he did. And I talked to him, I interviewed him for about 15, 20 minutes after practice last spring, and just, he had so many outside interests. And going back to the funny stories you had, I mean, I remember I was sitting in the locker room talking about movies for like 10 minutes after a game. I was like, dude, like, I literally had to be like, yo, dude, I gotta go. You know, like, I had to stop the conversation because he just wanted to talk to me about all these movies he'd seen and this one. And then we got into it about how this one wasn't good. I don't even remember the movie, honestly, what the movies were. It was just whatever was popular at the time 2 years ago. And I was like, yo, dude, like, finally, I was like, yo, hey, man, I gotta go. Like, usually it's like, you know, it's the other way around. Those dudes are trying to get away from you. And here was Martell, just wanted to talk about anything else but basketball, right, sometimes, about life. And so you kind of always want to root for that guy, especially with his story, like his tragic story about his mother and his upbringing and just how he's persevered and all his other interests. You kind of root for that kind of guy. And he did bring a positive influence to the locker room because I think that he had a serious side that people respected, but he'd also get along with him as well. And so for it all to kind of tragically end right here, I just kind of sad for him as a human being a little bit.
It was definitely a short story, man. A short and sweet story for him in D.C. And you know, you nailed all the points about how it transpired. I mean, he came in on a one-year deal, had, you know, average years prior to coming to the Wizards, and John Wall made him into almost a star. You know, John Wall got him paid. The system fit him. He hit, you know, those spot-up threes. But that was mostly all you got out of Martell, even in that one good year. It was pretty much just the shooting and the offense. And, you know, he was stronger getting to the rim more so than, you know, the succeeding years up until, you know, his complete demise. But he got paid. They signed him to that contract. Did he earn it? I think to a certain degree. I think the Wizards were a lot more optimistic about the long-term outlook of Martell, that he would last, or at least be as serviceable as he was, at least for the next 2 years, and maybe then start to decline a little bit. You know, him being, you know, a guy coming out of high school and playing so many years, even at the age of 28 or 29. But at the same time, I think Martell himself regressed on his own a bit. He, you know, not to say that the, you know, the money is what got him lazy. That may or may not have been a factor, but, you know, he did start to get injured a lot more after that first year. And then he comes out and, you know, said that, you know, his goal is to, you know, play a few more years, retire, and go back to Portland and raise his kids. You know what I mean? And when you have that kind of mindset, when you've got that real, you know, real quick outlook where you're ready to just play and move on, that probably factors into, you know, your training and your work ethic a little bit too. Am I blaming him? I'm not really, no, not so much. He is who he is, what he wants to do. It's not fair that it happens at the expense of the team, but again, that may or may not have been some factors of Martell and why he regressed so much and why he quickly flamed out and got, you know, as quickly as he did. So it is sad. It is sad. It's sad to see him go so soon. I feel like we lost Martell two seasons ago, really. I mean, that was really pretty much the last time we saw him really so active and talkative in the locker room. We haven't seen him in a long time. It's just sad to see that it's officially closed out now, and we wish we got a lot more out of him than we did.
It's funny. He ends up, his Wizards career is the seventh most three-point field goals of all time. And Washington Bullets, yeah. Number one is Arenas, Jameson, Chris Whitney, Tracy Murray, Bradley Beal, your boy Nick Young, Martell Webster, Deshaun Stevenson, Michael Adams, and Trevor Ariza are the top.
Are these attempts or makes?
Makes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, makes. Yeah. He's 10th in attempts, actually. Gilbert has so many attempts and makes more than anyone. But, yeah, he's... it looks like, yeah, he's pretty much going to be seventh for a while, apparently. I mean, Bradley Beal has 359. Tracy Murray's at 410. Chris Whitney's at 449. So Bradley will probably be a third all time pretty shortly, maybe by March.
But the thing is that Webster probably did this in probably a fraction of the games that a guy like Murray did, or or even Bradley Beal at this point. You know, I mean, he had that one full season. I'm not sure how many games did Martell play after his first season combined.
See, 2 years ago he actually played a lot. He just didn't play well. Not last year. 2 years ago, when they beat the Bulls and lost to the Pacers, he played 78 right. games that year. He played 76 games his first year. Played 32 last year, and then none this year, and then none next year. So basically, he's gonna get paid He's gonna get paid 2.5 seasons for playing 32 right. games. So I'd say that signing was in that case is probably not a good one, and also maybe you shouldn't sign people to 5-year deals when they have multiple back surgeries. Hey, yeah. that's just you know, I'm not in the front office. I might give my advice for free here for the people on this podcast on an iPod. But to finish up on Martell, the roster move, Hollins, what do you think he brings to the team? Do you like this decision? Where do you think maybe they should go with this player exception? Like your thoughts on moving forward?
I'm not really sure what to say about Hollins. I mean, Hollins is a career 11-minute-per-game guy. You know, he's a 7-foot guy. He's obviously a presence. You know, you can't really avoid a 7-foot guy on your roster. You know, he's going to be visible. He's going to make some sort of impact. You know, if we're going to define him by his career and his numbers, I mean, he's not a guy that was really utilized a lot. Kind of a plug-and-play kind of guy. Like you said, when, you know, if there's an injury or, you know, Gortat's, you know, kind of not playing well and needs to be taken out. But Hollins is a mobile 7-footer. He's one of those guys that can maybe play in the same lineup as Gortat if they want to have that second big who can also, you know, I don't think Hollins really stretches the floor. He's not really much of a shooter, but he's a guy that can, you know, be planted out on the perimeter at certain times and crash, you know, cut to the rim, go back door, or, you know, crash the glass. So I don't know if that's really an option or not, but as far as Hollins is concerned, he's one of those frequent flyer guys, 7 teams in 9 years, so he obviously brings experience. He's probably seen everything in an NBA locker room, so that'll probably be something that, you know, they could benefit from. So, not really sure what exactly the Wizards are looking for in Hollins, other than a guy that could probably relieve Gortat from time to time. So, we'll just have to see.
Do you think this maybe the Nene calf injury is a little maybe worse than we? Well, it's not worse. We always expect worse with Nene's injuries, right?
Yeah, it definitely can be. It definitely can be. And Nene's lower body health is something that we inevitably have to encounter every season. I love the way Nene's played so far. I think he almost looks like he's in the best shape that he's been in as a Wizard. Just by seeing the way he's so nimble and active and bouncy and getting to the rim and the jab step. And so he looks about as good as we see him in Washington, but like I said, that lower body is going to take a toll on him at one point or the other, and you just never know when. And that after Nene, who do you have as the big on the roster without Hollins, besides Blair? You know what I mean? And so I can see where Hollins can fit in if need be. So according to Jay Michael, he's been in shape. He's been anticipating getting signed by a team. So hopefully we'll see some of that going to fruition at some point.
Yeah, and Gooden has been out with a calf. You know, he's not really the 5 guy, but he's another stretch 4 yeah. kind of option. And Neil sat out with a groin. And they're waiting for Allen Anderson to come back as well. So once again, the Wizards.
But Neil's been great. I love Gary Neil. I think he's been about as good as we can expect Neil to be coming off the bench. I call him a petty cash box. I've been trying to coin that nickname for him because he's just that go-to. You know, whenever you need some instant offense, he had that 23-point game. He's been hitting threes. You know, he's a good utility guy on offense. When you need some scoring, he's not entirely consistent, but he's been everything we could ask for.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to when Allen Anderson comes into this roster and how he kind of where he fits. I know it's hard to be like, oh, wait till they get Ellen Anderson back and this team's just gonna rock it. It's not that. You know, that's a pretty stupid take. But it also, I do feel that he was brought in, and I like his energy around the team, and he had a good season with the Nets, and I think he fits. He can sit in a corner, hit some threes. I think he can pair well with Wall. I think they can go small with him. I think he can maybe guard some bigs at the four spot a little bit better than Otto. How you were kind of worried a little bit with Otto, and that you can kind of spot him different places, and there's some versatility there that I think that this team could really use as a spark. If he's the long-term answer, I have no idea of that, but I'd like to see him in the mix. I think that that'll be a bright spot for the Wizards once he joins the team, which, I don't know, January, he's got a bum ankle, another surgery, another guy we signed that has injuries. That's awesome. Abdullah, it has been way too long. I know you're in San Francisco. You need to go have an after-work drink or more, and I need a new beer too, but we have rambled on about these Wizards, man. It's been a hell of a time.
So much to talk about.
Yeah. Tell. I don't know. Talk to the people. Talk about your site. What you got going on? Just let the people know. Plug yourself, man. It's all you.
HoopDistrict.net. That's where it's at. We blog. We find. We Instagram. We're credentialed, so we're at the games. We Snapchat. Snapchat's been heavy this year. Just anything that you don't see on TV, we try to bring that to you. Via all sorts of media. So HoopDistrict.net, Twitter at HoopDistrictDC, the Instagram HoopDistrictDC, the Snapchat HoopDistrictDC. Follow us on all those mediums. We're here all season long through the playoffs. So it's a lot of fun. And we try to transpose that fun over onto our fans as well.
Well, I hope this was some fun for you. I hope that you get paid this week, and you know, you get a paycheck every Friday. Unfortunately, I'm not going to pay you for this. You know, until I get the money. Hey, listeners, feel free to donate money to for these positive pixels. Actually, this has been the most negative podcast I've done in a while. But I think that, you know, this will be probably better than most things you'll listen to on this team, and will give me the real, because he is correct. He is very good. You know, I try to be good at the Vine machine. You know, I'm something here and there, but these guys do.
I'm the backup Vine guy. Shout out to Joe.
Joe is the big Vine guy. That's correct, right?
He's the head Vine.
He's the head Vine guy. Yeah, what up, Joe? I'm giving him all the credit, but yes, it comes from your account, so I guess I don't know who's actually doing it. Both you guys did a hell of a job, but great commentary, and it's a lot of fun covering the team covering the team with people that know their shit, and then also that can have a fun and not too uptight about it all, and also who are fans and also get upset when I get upset and emotional, kind of like Mr. Marcin Gortat, the future president of Poland. But thank you everyone for joining us. It has been a monster podcast, and we don't even really talk about this, the upcoming games. Actually, I will. They play the Cavs on Tuesday. They played the Kobe Lakers. I thought about doing the Dear Kobe letter, just like that'd be my opening. I just read the letter. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll just read the letter.
Yeah,
just...
you're gonna get a love post about Kobe from Hoop District at the end of this week.
You got one coming.
Got a diehard Kobe fan going to the game, and he's gonna be covering the Lakers locker room. So,
oh great!
We'll try to make it as Wizards relevant as possible, but. It's coming.
Yeah. I'm going to have Mr. Connor Dirks is going to join me here supposedly on Thursday after these two games. So there'll be a...
Connor's fun.
Yeah, Connor will...
Shout out to Dirks.
Yeah, good Dirks. He avoids me at all costs. Yeah, I know. Naptown. I know. He also had to leave his Thanksgiving weekend early for work. Damn work. Why can't we all just make millions of dollars talking about basketball? You know, that'd be a lot more fun. And then so the Cavs on Tuesday, Lakers at home on Wednesday. Hopefully getting a pot up doing with Connor Dirks at Truth About It on Thursday. And I'm covering the Suns game on Friday at the Verizon Center. And I believe they play the Mavs on Sunday is the one.
I'll be at the Mavs game.
The Mavs on Sunday. So, you know, once again, there's four games. They got to go 3-1. They have to go 3-1. Anything worse than 2-2 or worse. 2-2 is okay, I guess. 1-3 is disaster. And we're back. I'm back on this pod saying negative pixels next week, right?
Yeah, well, the schedule, you know, I'll leave with this. The schedule is heavy. So the turnaround time to make adjustments and to correct things, It's very, 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 very short.
And then they got so, and then they got a road trip out. They got a road trip coming.
Midwest road trip.
Yeah, coming out. I think New Orleans, the Houston, and there's another one too. Memphis. I think they play those three teams coming up in December. Yeah. So you know, they're not going to win all those. So this homestand is going to be key. These three games after the Cavs, and I mean, hey. You know, F LeBron, F the Cavs, shock the world tomorrow night, Wiz. But hey, Abdullah, thanks again. Thanks for coming on with me and everyone listening. You know, leave your comments and tweet at me, Adam McGinnis, and I don't know. Everyone always says this stuff on podcasts. I don't really care about any of that, but but you should you know, tell me how bad I suck on the iTunes machine, and hopefully you're working out this week to work off all your pie, because that's what I'm going to be doing. Thank you so much, and go Wiz. I doubt you know what she said. Let's get this up on your chest right here, right now. I'm trying to make this a mess. We're trying to run in the dark. Got me.